Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, June 18th, 2007, and you are listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, Dr. Dick, that's me. Today we celebrate Gay Pride Week with a very special show. Our program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You will find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. You'll be able to watch all kinds of delicious, entertaining, enriching, and educational videos from the comfort of your very own home. Schlepping out to the video store to pick up your smut is so last century. Don't you agree? I have a really delectable show for you today, but before we begin, I'd like to remind you of the Lickety Split Sex Advice Podcast Voicemail Hotline at 866-422-5680. 866-422-5680. This is a free, no pressure, voicemail kind of setup. No human will answer the phone, least of all me. So don't be shy, my pretties. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Okay, on with the show. Our first correspondent is from Washington, D.C. He's 52 and he names himself Happenstance. He writes, given the hoopla about the Surgeon General nominee's remarks about the difference between our sexual and alimentary apparatus, just how much wear and tear does anal sex cause to the rectum? Are there any long-term hazards other than the chance of infection from poor hygiene? Wouldn't you know it? Another brilliant nominee from the Bush administration. James Holsinger, the nominee for Surgeon General of the United States, is to medicine what Alberto Gonzalez is to justice and Michael Brown is to disaster relief. You go, George. It's laughable. Another ideologue with a particular animosity toward gay and lesbian people is being set up as the arbiter of issues of health and wellness for our entire nation. Brilliant. Reparative therapy for gay and lesbians and fear-mongering for all you other sodomites, especially you godforsaken heterosexual assfuckers. Like I always say, there's never a scarcity of sexual fascists out there, people who believe that sexual tastes and preferences are carved in stone, or there's only one right way to be sexual. They'll persecute anyone who doesn't conform to their strict, immutable notions of sexuality and eroticism. Despite the proliferation of these heterofascists, homofascists, and what have you, they are all very wrong about the indomitable human spirit. As we all know by now, ass play is not just for the gays anymore. And while there have been strong taboos surrounding anal sex in the past, mainly because ass play has been associated with homosexuality, these taboos are finally and rapidly breaking down. Perhaps that explains the rear guard action, big pun intended, by the Bush administration. It is important to remember that while some people find cornholing repugnant, others find it stimulating, exciting, and a normal part of their sexual intimacy. And since all of us have assholes, and each one comes equipped with a load of erotic nerve endings, people of all sexual persuasions are discovering the joys of anal pleasure. Be it a finger, a dildo, a butt plug, or a good old-fashioned dick-in-the-ass fucking, it's the new sexual rage. You know, studies suggest that somewhere between 50 and 60% of gay men have anal sex on a regular basis. A slightly smaller percent of straight folks are now experimenting with butt play. Commercially produced porn, particularly of the straight variety, is now brimming over with backdoor action. Only a few years ago, this was a relatively rare fetish. Now it's totally mainstream. In terms of wear and tear and long-term hazards, if you treat your hole and that of others with respect, with the respect it deserves, you can be sure that it will give you a lifetime of pleasure. different sexually charged orifices, an asshole, a mouth, a cunt, have different tolerance levels for what they can endure. We'd all do well to respect these individual limits. The first thing to say about anal sex, particularly casual butt-fucking, is always use a condom and use lots of water-based lubricant. This will be your frontline protection against HIV and other STIs. Your ass is a very receptive place, but tissues therein are pretty delicate. It's not uncommon to develop cuts and fissures that can become infected if a modicum of care isn't used during ass play with yourself or another. That's why Dr. Dick always suggests that you get to know your hole and its limits before you share your behind with others. A man's ass has something quite unique that a chick's ass doesn't have, and that's the prostate gland. We've talked a lot about this in the past. A guy's prostate is a small walnut-shaped gland a couple of centimeters inside his hole. When massaged by a finger, dildo, or cock, it is the source of incredible sensations. Even though women don't have a prostate, anal stimulation can be just as pleasurable for them. One word of caution, though. Gals, you'll want to keep whatever you've had in your ass, fingers, toys, what have you, out of your pussy. To do otherwise is to ensure a yeast infection like candida, don't you know? Because the inside of your ass and rectum doesn't have the same sort of sensory nerves that you have on your skin, you can do damage by inserting sharp objects into your ass. So always cut your fingernails before playing with yourself or others. Never put anything up your ass that could slip in and get caught behind your anal sphincter. Your toys should be long enough, have a flared end, or a handle that you can keep hold of. Of course, never insert anything in your bum that can break. I always recommend that the novice cornholer start his or her ass exploration with a finger or two. This cuts down on the need to buy expensive toys till you discover if you like this kind of play or not. Once you've got the hang of the digital stimulation and you've discovered all the joy spots you can reach, you can move on to a vast array of toys and implements that are especially designed for your butt pleasure. This may or may not include a nice stiff cock. Good luck! Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Thanks for asking. Next, we hear from Robin. She's a female, 44, from Valparaiso, Florida. She writes, "My boyfriend and I have been together for over a year. We have always had frontal sex, and last night we had anal sex. Does this mean there's a change in his feelings in our relationship or just trying something different?" C-sex fans? Following directly on the very footsteps of the previous correspondent, we hear from a heterosexual couple experimenting with butt-fucking. What luck! To your question, Robin, since I am of the mind that anal sex is a natural variation of human sexual expression, which is enjoyed by loads and loads of people all over the world, I suspect that your boyfriend was just trying something different. I wouldn't read too much into it if I were you. However, the only way you're going to be absolutely sure is to ask him outright. You know, what's so curious about your message is that you say absolutely nothing about your response to the new sex play. Did it come as a surprise? Is it safe to assume that you were the bottom during this little adventure? Was this a new experience for you? Did you enjoy it? Gosh, seems to me that you have lots to talk about with the BF, right? I mean, if I'm curious as all get out about your reactions, and I don't even know you, imagine how interested he must be in hearing from you. Surely you have some input to share with him. Then, hopefully you'll share it with me. With a little luck, I'll hear back from you on this. One thing I'd like to know is, if you bottomed this time, is there a chance that he'll bottom for you in the future? pegging, you know, you with a strap on, is all the rage these days, don't you know? In fact, in my private practice, I often see straight men who are curious about ass play. Their ass. They're afraid if they bring up this topic of pegging with their girlfriends or wives, they'll think that they're turned queer. That's simply not the case. One of the suggestions I often make to my butt-curious male clients is that they initiate anal sex with their female partners, the chick as the bottom. Then, if all goes well, they could suggest that their partner pleasure their bum in the same way. I know it's a kind of a roundabout way of asking for what you want, but it often gets the job done. Good luck! Hey, Dr. Dick, what is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Don't be shy. Let it fly. Next, we hear from Gabe, who's a male, 32, from Salt Lake City. He writes, I travel a lot for work and often get really lonely on long trips. I'm not much for going to bars because I don't drink. And the idea of looking for sex in a bathhouse or a sex club or worse in the bushes really puts me off. Lately, I've been thinking I should just hire an escort, but I wouldn't even know what to do. There must be pretty common phenomenon, though, because I see tons of ads for escorts online in every city I go to. Any suggestions on how someone new to this might proceed? Sure enough, darling, I have got loads of suggestions. I presume you've ordered out for food on occasion while you were traveling for business, right? Finding a satisfying order-out sexual adventure is not fundamentally different than that. In the case of an escort, the commodities are charming company, erotic massage, and a little sex, instead of pot stickers, mushu pork, and kung pao chicken. Not all order-out is created equal. There is bad food and unsavory escorts. Do your homework. You already know that there are lots of escort or rent boy sites on the net. There are also several review sites where customers of the providers leave their comments regarding levels of satisfaction and the like. Most escorts out there, particularly the really good ones, immediately call your attention to the reviews they receive. This is a really good policy for both provider and consumer alike. It's like having the good housekeeping seal of approval stamped on your ass. I have a sense that some in my audience are turning up their nose at this discussion. I often hear from folks that they don't have to pay for sex. Oh yeah? Here's the thing, sex fans. No, sex is free. You may not be commercing in hard, cold cash, but there's a commercial aspect to all sex, even, or maybe I should say especially, in marriage. So if we could skip the moral high-horsing thing right now, I'd appreciate it. Okay, so now that we have that out of the way, we can get back to your question, Gabe. Once you've decided to proceed, start by interviewing a few working boys. This can initially be done via email. Ask for further information about his services and rates. Many escorts have plenty more photos of themselves available to send to prospective clients, so you might respectfully request those. If at all possible, include a photo of yourself, or at least a very accurate description of yourself. In all communication with the sex provider, never suggest that you are offering money for sex. In most jurisdictions, that's against the law. While we all know that the client hopes to get some sex action in the encounter, the money exchange is not for the sex, but for the provider's time and expertise. This may sound like splitting hairs, but if sex happens, it's by mutual agreement, by consenting adults, during the time that you arrange to be together. Curiously enough, many of the sex professionals I know, and I know a lot of them, tell me that a sizable portion of their clientele only want their company and companionship. Sex never enters the equation. Finding the right escort for you on any given occasion is your task. Know what you want and know how to ask for it. Don't waste your time or that of the provider by beating around the bush. If you are new to this sort of thing, say so. The rent-a-boy, if he's good at all, will be familiar with this territory and help you through the initial conversation. There are different levels of pros out there. Each will have his own fee structure for services provided. If you're looking for something kinky, be ready to pay lots more. Never try to bargain with the provider. If he's out of your price range, move along. Or you could simply come right out with it and say, "Listen, I have X amount of money to spend and I'm looking for some company. Are you available?" This way you let the provider decide if he has the spare time to offer at a discounted rate. You'll be a fool not to insist on safe sex, but there's a shitload of fools out there. Not all prostitutes are prostitutes because they want to. Some are supporting a drug habit. Some are working their way through college. For some, it's survival sex. For others, it's acting out behavior. But most guys who turn pro do so because they're good at what they do, and most enjoy the accompanying lifestyle. The truly successful provider will have a string of regulars, men they have a somewhat more intimate connection with. Kind of like finding a great Chinese restaurant and becoming a regular there. The proprietor might just offer you something that's not on the menu as a way of acknowledging your preferred customer status. Get it? Some Johns use the service of an agency. Sometimes that can be more reliable way to go at first. However, I am of the mind that the hardworking independent entrepreneur is best. Some agencies have theme rooms, such as dungeons and locker rooms and the like. You'll pay more for an agency call than you would for an individual provider because they have to cover their overhead. When arranging an outcall to your hotel, there may be an additional surcharge for traveling time and costs, especially at the cost of gasoline these days. This should be agreed upon before the deal is struck. Most independent escorts offer both in-calls and out-calls. They usually work out of their homes, and they also have day jobs. Some independent escorts also work in the porn industry. If this suits your taste, you will definitely pay premium for a date with a star. You'll also find among independent providers that unique phenomenon called gay for pay. These ostensibly straight, and I use that word in quotes, guys will have gay sex with gay men for money. In the old days, we used to refer to them as trade, and like we used to say in the business, today's trade is tomorrow's competition, if you catch my drift. At any rate, like I said at the beginning, a wise and informed consumer is a happy and satisfied customer. Good luck! Dr. Dick, what in the world is that toll-free podcast voicemail telephone number again? Why, it's 866-422-5680. Okay, Michael is next. He's a male, obviously, 23, from Minneapolis, and writes, "I am a 23-year-old bisexual paraplegic." Hey, you got to be available for whatever comes your way in a chair, right? "I got this way in a really stupid alcohol-related diving incident 3 years ago. So, okay, I fucked up. I was just getting my groove on sexually before the accident. Nothing serious, fooled around with my cousin Jack and got a severe case of blue balls with this chick Amber I used to date. Anyhow, I'm finding it hard to connect with guys or girls for a bit of fun, so I thought I would write you and ask for your advice. By the way, the equipment still works, sort of. I think most people think disabled people can't have or don't want sex. I would like to have a relationship with someone who doesn't pity me, but is hot for me. I have a really developed upper body, like a gymnast, and people tell me I have a very handsome face. That should be enough to get me laid, right? Is there such a thing as a wheelchair fetish? You're a fucking treasure, darling. I mean it. If you come across as upbeat, self-effacing, humorous, and sexy in person as you do in this message, you shouldn't have any problems finding a willing sex partner. Ah, but of course, writing for online sex advice from a total stranger is probably a whole lot easier than wheeling up to another hot dude or chick and suggesting a torrid session of the old slap and tickle, huh? But despite the inherent discomfort and difficulty of being that upfront, that's precisely what's going to get you laid. It's all in the presentation, Michael. Self-confidence and charm trumps disability every time. Many people think paralyzed from the waist down means there's nothing going on down there. It's your job to change their perception about that. Now, I'm not suggesting that you be a dick about it. Just be your sweet self and put it out there as natural as can be. You're entitled to get some lovin' just like the rest of us. And just like the rest of us, you're going to have to learn how to ask for what you want. While I completely understand you are not looking for a mercy fuck from someone willing to take you out of pity, there may be a number of potential partners out there who would jump your bones as a novelty. At least at first. I certainly wouldn't turn my nose up at these folks if I were you, because a novelty fuck is a teachable moment when you can show the benighted dude or chick that you can what you can do. If you see yourself as a sexual being and put out a sex-positive vibe, you will connect with folks. Make eye contact and smile. If you're leering at her tits or focused on his package, you're objectifying the potential partner in a way you wouldn't want to be objectified yourself. Consider coming up with a few choice lines that call attention to the sexual things you can do, like, "The old legs don't work so good anymore, but there's nothing wrong with my mouth and tongue." As for wheelchair fetishists, they're out there, honey. Just like the amputee devotee fetishists I talked about a couple of weeks ago. There are even paraplegic porn stars. Just think, this could be the beginning of a whole new career move for you. I suggest that you do an internet search using the keywords wheelchair and fetish. I did, and I found a couple of really amazing sites. The first, www.gimpsgonewild.com, and another, paracathy.com. That's paracathy.com. Check them out. Hey, and send me some photos. Maybe I can put them up on the site and with a little personal ad. If that don't get you laid, nothing will. Just remember, each of us has one kind of a disability or another. Yours just happens to be really obvious. Good luck! Finally, in honor of Gay Pride, a little sex history lesson. This week, the Stonewall Riots. The confrontations between demonstrators and the police at the Stonewall Inn, a mafia-owned bar in Greenwich Village, New York, over the weekend of June 27th through 29th, 1969, are usually cited as the beginning of the modern movement for gay and lesbian liberation. What might have been a routine police raid on a bar patronized by homosexuals became the seminal event which sparked the entire movement. The Stonewall Riots have developed into the stuff of myth, about which many of the most commonly held beliefs are probably untrue. But here's what we know for sure. In 1969, it was illegal to operate any business catering to homosexuals in New York City, as it still is today in many places in the world. The standard procedure for the New York City police was to raid these establishments on a semi-regular basis to arrest a few of the most obvious types, harass the others, and shake down the owners prior to letting the business continue as usual the next evening. The Stonewall myth has that the majority of patrons at the Stonewall Inn were black and Hispanic drag queens, but perhaps that's a bit of an exaggeration. In fact, most of the patrons were what one would find in any gay establishment of that era. Drag queens for sure, a smattering of hustlers, of course, but most were probably young, college-age white men who could only look forward to spending the rest of their lives in quiet desperation of the middle-class closet. They knew it was reasonably safe to socialize at the Stonewall Inn because if it was raided, there were drag queens and bull dykes there too, and they were far more likely candidates for arrest. This gave everyone else time to cover their faces and run for the nearest exit when the cops busted the joint. After midnight, June 27th, 28th, 1969, four men and two women from New York City Tactical Police Force called a raid on the Stonewall Inn at 55 Christopher Street in Greenwich Village. After leaving the bar, many of the patrons decided to wait outside while the police dispatched the usual suspects to the vans they had waiting. It is said that it was the first time lesbian and gay men stood their ground and fought back. In fact, there had already been several scuffles of sizable groups of gays resisting arrest in both Los Angeles and New York. More to the point, drag queens always fought back, alone and unsupported, as they were led away to waiting police vans. What was unique about Stonewall and gives it its significance, and which continues to inspire us today, was the event was the first time when gay people, as a group, were able to see that what threatened drag queens and bull dykes was an oppression which threatened us all. The greatest myth concerning Stonewall is that it was a gay and lesbian event. This is likely untrue. Those who were pitching pennies, then beer bottles, at the police that night weren't even homosexual, for the most part. The only publicly reported arrest was a straight folk singer who was appearing next door and who had joined the melee after leaving work. The streets of Greenwich Village were home to many young people whose politics were defined by the blossoming anti-war movement, left-wing political ideologies, and the successes of the women's liberation and black civil rights movement. In all, some 300 to 400 people became involved in the attempt to stop the arrest. This erupted into a violent protest. The police and the bar owners, who were part of the repressive system at work, barricaded themselves inside of the inn for their protection. While they awaited reinforcements, the crowd outside attempted to burn the bar down with the cops inside. Eventually, a squadron of patrol cars dispersed the crowd after several hours of milling around the narrow streets of the village. The following night, a new crowd assembled outside the Stonewall. This time, many young gay men came to protest the raids that had become commonplace in many of the gay bars in the district. They held hands, and they were kissing, and they formed a chorus line singing, "We are the Stonewall girls, we wear our hair in curls, we have no underwear, we show our pubic hair." Police dispersed this group without incident. Provocative articles then appeared in the New York Post, the Daily News, and especially the Village Voice, which helped galvanize gay and lesbians to fight back. Within a few days, representatives of the Mattachine Society and the Daughters of Bilitis, two of the country's first gay and lesbian rights groups, organized the city's first ever gay power rally in Washington Square. On July 27, 1969, speeches were followed by a candlelight march back to the site of the Stonewall Inn. 500 people showed up, thought to have included most of the entire out-of-the-closet population of lesbians and gay men in New York, as well as their supporters from the left. The riots also led to another important event. Flyers began circulating calling for homosexual liberation. Their tagline, "Do you think homosexuals are revolting? You bet your sweet ass we are." The rest, boys and girls, as they say, is history. Before Stonewall, there were a number of groups working for homosexual rights, ever since the concept had been defined in the 19th century in Germany. Here in the United States, Frank Kameny of Washington, D.C. organized Homosexual Reminder Days in 1965. These events were held on the Ellipse across from the White House and at Independence Hall in Philadelphia. They were sedate affairs with only a few dozen picketers. The men wore jackets and ties, and the lesbians wore skirts and dresses. Their principal demand was for civil service protection and the right of homosexuals to hold government jobs. The New York delegation that attended the July 4th picket in 1969, 1 week after Stonewall, held hands and shouted down the other marchers. This was the last Homosexual Reminder Day, and a clear sign that the Stonewall riots had set in motion something completely new. During the first year after Stonewall, a whole new generation of organizations emerged, mainly identifying themselves for the first time as gay, meaning not just sexual orientation, but a radical new basis for self-identification and with a sense of open political activism. Older groups such as the Mattachine Society or the Westlake Discussion Group, whose members had used first names or altogether fictitious ones to protect their identities, soon made way for the Gay Liberation Front and the various regional gay activists' alliances. The vast majority of these new activists were under 30. That's right, Dr. Dick's generation. We were new to political organizing and believed everything was possible. Many groups were affiliated with specific colleges and universities, again replacing the word homophile with the all-new and powerful word gay. By the summer of 1970, groups in at least 8 American cities were sufficiently organized to schedule simultaneous events commemorating the Stonewall riots for the last Sunday in June. The events varied from a highly political march of 3,000 to 5,000 in New York to a parade with floats for 1,200 in Los Angeles and something between 2,000 and 7,000 revelers in San Francisco. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the link that reads Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Before I go, I want to call your attention once again to the lickety-split connection at www.drdick.com. Remember, folks, no one's going to personally answer your phone call because it's voicemail. That's right. Dr. Dick is offering you a free podcast voicemail telephone number to call in your questions. You do want to be in one of my podcasts, don't you? Call now. The number, 866-422-5680. And don't forget to look for Dr. Dick's podcast on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under health subcategory sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex is even better. Over and out.